Hey guys, I'm Alex.
And I'm Drew.
And today on the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast, we're taking a look at Riri Williams' Ironheart by Eve Ewing, Kevin LaBranda, Luciano Vecchio, and Matt Miller. Let's go. Arrange a version of this for a gong ensemble, multiple pitched gongs,
and then Chris could perform it.
Yeah, and then also, does he have a nipple gong?
He has three octave tuned gongs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard a nipple gong before?
That's what these all are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. I love saying nipple gong.
I used to have one hanging in my office. Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast. We're taking a look at Riri Williams' Ironheart. This is not her origin story. You should read that one, too. But this one takes place a wee bit later.
Yeah, there was a... I feel like she made her debut, because I looked it up. It was like...
2015.
Yeah, and yep. Then this is 2018.
All new, all different, right after Secret Wars.
Oh, man, everything's after Secret Wars.
I'm telling you, if you want a pretty dang good, modern-ish lay of the land... read Secret Wars. It'll take you some time, but you're going to get a nice sampling, and you're going to have a super sweet point of reference. Also, the stories are just great. Like, Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars is, like, way up here for me, however daunting it might be to read. But we're checking out Ironheart, super cool character, who is also getting their own MCU show in the coming months.
How soon
we're pretty
do we know?
Early on. I think this year
okay.
is a possibility.
It is currently 2022, in case... you're listening back in the year 2030.
Yes. I heard rumors that she might have a cameo appearance in Black Panther 2, but we'll see.
Nice.
I can't remember where I heard that. It could be just some Twitter boob going, I know things. This is confirmed.
It could have been me. Just
yeah, you tweet about Ironheart all the time.
I do.
Yeah. cool. Before we get into this and carry on with our Black History Month, run of characters. Y'all been reading anything, yo?
Not since we recorded last.
Which happened to be moments ago.
About 5 minutes.
Yeah. Did I save anything for this? Or the next two are just going to be duds?
I really feel like I did read something, but I can't remember. I mean...
Civil War.
Doom Patrol and Spider-Man.
Yeah. We'll mention again, I am doing a special event in the Discord where we are reading massive Marvel events in no particular order, but we're starting with the Civil War. It's a little bit too big of a bite-off for this podcast, at least in its current format, but the format of Discord allows us to kind of go in, read sections at a time, check it out. Really cool event. Please jump on there and join us. It's a lot of fun. It's completely free. Just jump in there, talk about one of the early big events that is like still talked about and kind of played around today. Yeah,
I didn't realize how
links to the Discord in the description,
because I read the first three, which are Spider-Man and Iron Man. And I was just like, I did not realize how similar it was to Spider-Man's MCU debut.
Yeah.
Like just the way that they're talking to each other and future things. I was like, man, I don't know anything about Marvel. Like I was just like, I thought that this was all just manufactured for the sake of the screen. Mm-hmm. And there's just like so much of it. I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow. It's never like straight up word for word recreation of panels, but you can just tell there's a feel and a vibe that they do like, okay, let's check this in here for this film. It's super cool. Speaking of the Discord, you can find the links for that in the description. You can also find all of our social media stuff, probably pretty easy if you just look for it. It's at Two Man Comic Book Club with the number two. Some places at Two Man Comic Book. Like and subscribe on YouTube if you're watching it there, where we show all the panels in real time. Super cool. You can find Drew on his super cool website,
DrewMorrisMusic.com.
You can find me at Alex Wayne Miller on all social media platforms. Wayne is W-A-Y-N-E, just like Bruce Wayne, because I'm Batman. Tori, where can they find you?
Google me.
If you Google Torrance Watkins, turn on incognito mode.
And we'd really love it if you considered backing us on Patreon, patreon.com/two men comic book.
Did you almost say my Marvel's here?
Yeah.
If you'd like to listen to a better comic book podcast than what we have to offer, My Marvelous Year is available wherever you get your podcasts. Free ad. Maybe they'll give us a shout out now. I know they listen.
They've got a...
No, yeah, obviously.
I mean, we had 82 downloads like last Thursday or like Tuesday.
Tuesdays are great.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
Anyway, we're going to jump into the first five-ish issues of Riri Williams' Ironheart. I'm going to give you a little bit of a 60-second catch-up on the character. So
I love catch-up.
Riri Williams made her Marvel debut in 616 after the Secret War event of 2015.
You know, I think I heard that somewhere.
As we just mentioned before, she was a young African-American girl attending MIT well before the normal age of what you do that, as super geniuses do. And she reverse engineered a Tony Stark Iron Man suit, and it actually ended up being better than his Mark One, just because she's so awesome. And at this point, Tony Stark is MIA. Nobody knows where he's
currently
at.
in the story as we're reading this one now.
Sorry, no, in her origin.
Okay.
Yeah. In her origins, she's basically taking up the mantle of that and learning how to be a superhero. She's a genius. She has an Iron Man-like suit, and she eventually dons the name of Ironheart. Part of her origin story also involves, I think, her dad is killed very early on in her life, and then also her best friend around the same time. So it's kind of this triggering trauma event of her. And then one of the cool things that happens early on, this is light spoilers if you're like, I'm going to go read her origin story. She needs an AI for the suit. Like, that's the one thing that Tony Stark's Iron Man suits always had. So she goes to Stark Industries and is like trying to get one. It ends up getting the artificial intelligent equivalent of Tony Stark to be her AI, which, sidebar, if they're going to bring Robert Downey Jr. back into the MCU and still hold the weight of the sacrifice he made in Endgame, that's how they got to do it. Bring him back as an artificial intelligence inside Riri Williams' Ironheart armor.
Early on in my tiptoeing into Marvel, yeah, I was like, what? Tony Stark is an AI? Well, first I was like, Tony Stark's dead. And wait, he's an AI?
Yeah.
I don't even know whenever I got to a point where he was back. I don't know.
Yeah, it happened after Dan Slott's run on Iron Man 2020, which actually was one of those things where they made Iron Man 2020 way back in the day, and then the year 2020 came around. I was like, well, I guess we got to do this to keep it real, which ends up being his brother, Arno Stark. Yes, Tony Stark has a brother who takes on the role of Iron Man, and then Iron Man in his digital form. It's a whole thing.
His name's Arno?
Yeah, Arno Stark, A-R-N-O.
Dang it. I have a one of the stories I've written multiple versions of has a main character named Arno.
Who's
a wizard. I was also thinking about making Arno be my pseudonym or my my pen name for whenever I start releasing noise music.
Do it. It's still, most people have already forgotten that I said it.
Okay.
And nobody knows
who now Arno everybody Stark is. Everybody's going to be able to find out who Arno the noise musician is because I just spoke it into a recorded format.
Yeah.
Or did you? Forget that you just heard that.
Yeah. Anything else I'm trying to think of? Oh, she becomes a member of the Champions team, which is an Avengers offset with Ironheart, Miles Morales, Spider-Man, Miss Marvel, Sam Alexander, Nova, Viv, Vision's daughter, who survived the events of that book. Who else? Somebody else. I can't remember.
There's a splash page of them at some point, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe we can just be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's some significant references to one of their big fights with a big old purple boy.
You mean the one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater?
That's his name.
did you guys ever watch that movie?
Yeah. What was it? I know I watched it.
The one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple
people. That was the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was a reference in a movie.
And I'm pretty sure Neil Patrick Harris was in it. I don't know
why. I don't know if I've actually watched that then. I think I've heard that in a reference in a movie.
One-eyed, one-horned. I can't sing anymore because we'll get sued.
Anyway, anything before we get into Ironheart after that extended 60-second catch-up?
I love catch-up.
Does
Eve L. Ewing have any relation to Al Ewing?
I don't know. I'm just curious. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. That's all I got.
That'd be a good question. Yeah. So right. Eve Ewing, Kevin LaBranda, Luciano Vecchio, and Matt Milla. I'm thinking it's Milla and not Mia, but I could be saying that wrong. if you know better than I do.
And the person who we've probably said on this podcast more than any other person, Clayton Cowles.
Clayton Cowles, man. If that guy's not rich doing letters,
then they don't pay letterers enough.
No, they don't, because he's doing the work. Cool. Also, can we just take a second to appreciate like this cool armor? Like, I'm here for Ironheart's design. Like, super awesome. Anyway, we're going to give you, as always, a kind of high-level view of this story, hoping that you read this because this is a book club. So we'll go through some of the art.
As soon as I finished reading the first five, I wanted to keep reading, but I was like, I need to read Red, White, and Black, and it's probably more important that I read that than to do extra reading of Riri Williams.
Right. So we get like a kind of a, as a good number one of a comic does, a quick origin story through some monologue. Usually we have Riri flying around, and it's kind of known that she still goes to MIT. And before this, she was granted like a full like lab for her to just basically do all her work, because MIT is very aware that it looks awesome for them to have basically the current Iron Man or Iron Heart.
People keep calling her the wrong name, by the way.
Yeah, they screw up her name constantly because she's new, and that's just how it works. It's, you know, an annoying thing for her to have to deal with. But anyway, she shows up to her lab at MIT, and there's just like some guy in here who is the dean of MIT, and he just got a bunch of people in there. And she's basically really annoyed that they just showed up in her place of work, even if, you know, there's like kind of this argument of like, well, we're offering you this, so we should have this. But a theme reoccurring throughout that, you know, I probably won't mention this several times over other than just kind of like, and then this is happening again, is that people keep intruding upon her space as she's trying to, you know, handle superhero things. And, you know, usually she's approaching this place in full gear, and, you know, people are just suddenly in there. It's like a hazard for them to be in there. And then she's like also working on like prototype Iron Man extensions that are dangerous, and people are in there picking stuff up. And what's this do?
Yeah.
And it's basically just a bunch of people with deep pockets that are, you know,
dignitaries. I think some of them might even be like world leaders.
Sure. Yeah. Just trying to make a thing, and it doesn't go well. It's kind of like this thing that Riri comes across as rude to some of them, because they're just like, why won't you just show us all of the stuff you're making right now and drop everything you're doing? Mm-hmm. So just an annoying thing that she's having to deal with. Quickly, we get into this place being attacked by, what's his name?
Clash.
And he used to be a Spider-Man villain. He's not that.
He worked for Peter Parker Industries.
Yeah, he's a C-tier villain at best. But anyway, he's kind of attacking this city and all these dignitaries and donors.
I do have to say, can I interrupt?
Please.
Can you pull up a picture of him? Page 11. So those of you who have been with us from the beginning might remember a certain character that I invented whenever I was in middle school.
Yeah.
Hypno Man.
Ah,
and
was this it?
It was the uniform was very similar. This is much better than mine. My dude had a ponytail.
I know some people would objectively say the ponytail's better.
Yeah. So anyway, I just saw these circles and I was like, dude, it's Hypno Man. I should sue.
Yeah.
And show them the manila folder that I have that has Hypno Man drawn on it. And I actually started writing his first comic book.
Yeah.
Didn't do any like sort of storyboarding or anything. I just literally took markers to a pre-made formatted comic book. It's terrible. But yeah, I saw that. This is Clash, but he might as well have been Hypno Man.
Yeah.
He uses sound. Clash
he has like
uses
a sound,
sound
wave thing whereas to hurt people.
Hypno Man uses hypnosis.
Yeah. So we should note that the dignitaries that were in there had these earpieces in.
Translators, yeah.
To translate their language in real time to Riri and also be able to understand.
Can I go back to like the very first time where we're told that? I just want to read this one dude's dialogue. He's like, "No worries, Miss Williams. We're equipped with portable translators that take in your language, provide audio translation in our earpieces, and instantly translate to respond to you. I am speaking Twi right now, and you are hearing me in English." And I just thought, like, man, that was really laborious the way you told us that, but it got the idea across. Yeah. And it made me laugh a little bit.
It also could have been, no worry, we have translators in our ears.
Yeah.
Same effect. Yeah. A little bit of them slipping back into show me, don't tell me kind of thing. Anyway, so Clash, that's his name?
Yep.
Why did I think it was something else? Anyway, he attacks.
It's the notes I took down. I could be wrong.
He attacks and all these people are in trouble, and Riri comes out And basically, she beats up on him. But the interesting part of this for issue one that kind of moves the story forward is that he is attacking in the name of the Ten Rings,
bum, bum, bum.
Which is
it's weird, like
much more significant group than he would typically be associated with.
I feel like she should have at least heard a little bit about them,
right.
If Marvel wanted them to be significant in the aftermath of,
sure,
it's been 3 years since Secret Wars and things have been wiped. Maybe it's just a lot more secretive than we are led to believe based on the MCU.
Right. I don't know for sure that the Ten Rings haven't been in some other comics. Mm-hmm. I guess to play devil's advocate of that, they do like pride themselves on being in the shadows and kind of being completely unaware. But still, if Tony Stark was your AI, you'd think maybe he mentioned it, or maybe he wouldn't. Anyway, she handles him pretty quickly. You know, and he basically has been monologuing, saying the whole time that this is his way of showing that he's capable of being a part of the Ten Rings. And she keeps him in check, and he ends up actually giving her this token that has the Ten Rings logo on it, and is basically saying, you know, me and you are not so different, like trying to fit in with
these. I think he even says, here, I see you in myself.
Yes. And we get this flashback at the very end while she's kind of off recuperating after the fight, and we see her dad and her mom, and they're out flying a kite, and she kind of wakes up, and she gets
to meet a friend from Chicago.
Yes, so we meet a friend from Chicago that we decided his name was Xavier. I was pronouncing it Javier, like a dip. Excuse me again.
And I did make a point of taking a note that
yes,
they talk about Star Trek, specifically citing she has a Geordi LaForge thing for cosplay. She's like embarrassed. She's like, it was for cosplay.
Right.
I have to imagine that thing is probably sweet. Like, there's no way she just made it out of plastic.
Definitely not fake.
And then they even go on to something which I completely concur. Like, they both nerd out about it. Like, man, I watched Next Generation for Geordi, but man, Deep Space Nine, Captain Sisko.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, Deep Space Nine made me feel things.
Yeah, like this. And see, that's what most people don't understand about Klingons.
Yeah.
And it's just in passing. So basically, they just go on this long FaceTime call. And it starts off rough, but then they start bonding, and there's a clock kind of off to the side of the camera showing that they're talking well into the morning. So a potential love interest, if you will, moving forward. Anyway, the call wraps up.
And he does make I think at some point, because the very last scene is important, but like, I think he asks, or she makes a comment at some point like, yeah, the one thing I really need for this suit is an AI system.
Sure, yeah. And then I think at one point asks her like, why are you doing this, by the way? There's a running theme also of her mom is like legitimately worried about her. She's already lost her dad and lost some other people. And Riri's kind of like, she's a rookie, right? The champions are basically a team of rookies. They don't have it all figured out yet. Even, you know, 3 years after this, they're not the Avengers. And they will see in this series that she struggles with some of the people she's fighting, and they're not high level villains. Anyway, suddenly, an AI named Natalie pops up.
I knew that's probably what it was, but I was like, is this a ghost? Like, I was really seriously like, okay, Natalie, is this something significant? Because I don't know her backstory.
Right. Yeah. So this will hit the hardest if you've read some of Riri's comics before. Basically, all you need to know is that Natalie is an AI made up of the thoughts and like consciousness of Riri Williams from a certain point. So she's like, is the digital embodiment of Riri's conscious, basically, that is going to step in as her AI and has like all her memories and
makes for some interesting conversation moments.
Yes. And that's the end of issue one. And let me move on to issue two.
Yeah, I will say, like, I actually made a note. I was just like, then Ghost Natalie shows up. And it was like within a few pages, I was like, oh, okay. No, that's not what that was.
Basically, just to summarize, I'm kind of like showing some of the overlays of the panels here. The big thing that happens in this one is we kind of get this little flashback to Riri when she got to school as like a little kid, like to high school when she was 10 or whatever. She's one of those. Mm-hmm. And she has this character here. I can't remember her name. Daya, yes, who went out of her way to help her on her first day and help her get her locker and stop kids from being mean to her. But anyway, she goes to Boston and she's in this little convenience store. Conveniently enough when it's getting held up, it's getting robbed. And she starts to kind of, you know, do her thing and save the day. But then something triggers her to have like a pretty significant flashback of a time when her father died, saving her from gunshots. I think it's just the nature of the gunshots. Like, she's trying to protect people from getting shot, and it basically causes her to freeze in the moment, and she's just literally standing there getting pelted with, like, high artillery bullets. And the armor's holding. She's not getting hit internally, but it is busting real quick. And then, like, the AI, Natalie, snaps her out of it. She's like, you need to get your head in this right now. And then we see this very small but temporary flash of just, like, hyper power, just to show, like, oh, no, she can actually, you know, hit pretty hard. She saves them, but she's kind of shaken from this whole thing, so she just blasts off and leaves the scene.
Yeah. She ends up back in her lab and walks in with and the dean's there with a bunch of black suits who are basically taking pictures of everything.
Yes.
And, like, she's like, what is this? Like, this is the kind of the first time that we see she's maybe like, wait a minute. This is my stuff, but I guess since I'm on your campus, you're bankrolling me. I ultimately report to you.
Right.
But as they're leaving, Natalie kind of says, oh, by the way, all those people were on our Wi-Fi, so I took the liberty of hacking in and deleting all the pictures that they took. And she's like, oh, thanks for that.
Yeah. So we fast forward. She has realized that Daya, the girl that was helping her before, has gone missing.
Yep.
And she's doing research on how to find her. She's also sitting there with Xavier, and they're enjoying a nice orange soda and some popcorn while watching some sort of action film. It looks like a kaiju.
An iron something. It's like a giant Iron Man.
Yeah.
Fighting a dragon thing.
Right. Anyway, we see this guy on this, the Councilman Thomas Birch, which will be significant later, and I add one of those I approve this message videos. And then moving forward, basically she shows up to this place that she has a lead, like trying to find out like what is actually going on here, and she thinks there might be like some link to these like small petty crimes of like stealing phones have been going on. So she shows up to this plaza in Chicago. And
where the bean is.
Where the bean is. I've been to the bean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice bean.
I get that a lot.
She basically sees this kid or somebody. It's not, we don't know that it's a kid. Sorry, spoiler.
Somebody's stealing a phone.
And she, you know, it's not as big deal as the normal crimes that she's stopping, but she stops down in front of them and realizes it's just a 10-year-old little boy. And quickly find out that somebody's making him do this and there might be more kids being forced to do crime. But then suddenly she's ambushed by a much bigger threat. And it's like these blue Sub-Zero looking ninja type cyber ninja things. And this is an instance where she's almost into the deep where she can't stand anymore. Like, she's on her tippy toes here for this fight. She does like hang and, you know, get the better of them eventually. But they kind of disappear at the moment where she starts to get the upper hand. They just kind of flash out of the area, and she's not sure how they left out of there.
She's like asking Natalie. She's like, "Did they just like wondering if they died?" And she's like, "Oh no, they just teleported."
Right. So we go elsewhere in the city where we're seeing these kids talking to somebody who has been forcing them to do these petty crimes, and they're like, "Hey, Riri showed up," and then we see this flash of Daya just passed out against a wall, and then the issue ends. Do we need to take a quick break and then jump back on the next ones?
If you like.
Cool. We'll be right back. And we're back, and we're going to carry on with issue 3 of Ironheart. Drew, take it away.
So we open up with Riri is playing hooky and letting Natalie do her classes at MIT for her, which I thought was great. There's somebody like leans over her shoulder and she's like, are you going to take notes? She's just like, I am, or something like that. What would you do if there was a AI ghost in a class with you?
I probably wouldn't focus very well.
Yeah, me either.
I'd be just like staring constantly. Yeah.
So anyway, while this is happening, the MIT dean drops by her lab, and she's... Wait, what? Oh, no. I didn't put a period in my notes. Forget that. News of Daya's disappearance while she's down in her lab in Chicago. And I think, she's hanging out with Xavier, and that's when they find that out. But eventually they find out that, wait, what is this? Man, I did so much better about this whenever we were talking just a moment ago.
We just know that Daya got out, basically.
Goes to hospital. Okay, so that's what it was.
So we saw Daya at the end of the last episode in this warehouse.
I didn't read the middle one, but it said news reports that Daya's out.
Oh,
yeah. I missed that. Yeah. So I was like, how is she going to the hospital if we don't know that Daya has been released yet?
Right.
But now, okay, yeah. Which, whenever she goes to the hospital, she uses her little laser thing to like cut a hole.
Yeah.
It never shows her putting that back.
Yeah.
Do you think
thought about that? I was like, when her nurses were like, what's going on?
Does damage control come and take care of that?
Ah, that's the obvious answer.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So she talks to Daya trying to like, what? Because Daya like lied on the news saying like, oh, I just ran away and I fell and got knocked out. Mm. She's like, why are you lying about that? And she's like, well, the people told me that if I just got you off the trail, that you wouldn't pursue them and then they'd be fine and they'd leave me alone. But at that point, we get introduced to somebody who's just standing there with like glowing eyes in the shadows. We learn that his name is Midnight's Fire. And basically they fight. And during this, we kind of get a flashback, which is a very interesting scene of, because I think like he has his arm around her throat and she flashes back to Thanos having the same thing.
So if you have not read any of Riri Williams before, or specifically some of the events of the Champions, this was like kind of an intense moment of the Champions fought Thanos at one point and they didn't do so well. Like they kind of quickly got in and over their heads and Thanos almost killed Riri. Like he got really close and this is kind of a triggering. We've seen that she is very much dealing with like the PTSD and maybe understandably so, just the weight of, she's still pretty young. I think she's like 17 or something like that in these comics right here. And she's in over her head a little bit. So
there is one cool part. Like she runs away. She manages to use her power to incapacitate Midnight's Fire, runs away. And I think this is where she like takes some tape and like you gets a fingerprint printing off of her neck from where this dude was strangling her and like holds it up. And has Natalie like run the numbers, and she's able to figure out who this guy is while she's fighting him. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, she incapacitates him and runs away to regroup.
Yes, and that's the end of that issue.
In the beginning of the next one, I think this is what I was thinking of earlier. Sorry about that. We see that the MIT dean has dropped by her lab to show more people around, but she's in Chicago, and he's like, "Why aren't you here?"
Right.
She's like, sorry, I'm on a in-depth or a learning exhibition or something like that. But anyway, while she's just sitting in the garage, at her home, Midnight's Fire just shows up and kind of just like very calmly, he's like, why aren't you scared? And she was like, well, you knew who I was. It was just a matter of time before you figure out where I lived and you were going to show up. Do you want a pop?
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not really a pop guy. And he proceeds to basically do an exposition dump, just telling us everything about his past, where his mom and dad were powerful people and kind of an arranged marriage sort of thing. He grew up with superpowers, but then he ended up on the streets and built up a gang and ended up being a part of the Ten Rings. And essentially, he wants Riri to join.
Yes, so another recruitment for the Ten Rings. Yeah. I also note that I liked this dynamic, like, Riri, he's in her home, right? Mm-hmm. What's already super invasive, and she does not have her armor on. But if you notice, she's got like these gauntlet like things that the suit is like stored in. So at any moment, she can defend herself.
Yep. And anyway, just like in the past, they fight in the garage. But this time, he knocks her out and leaves of his own accord.
Yes.
So that's that. That's that issue. Like it was basically the whole thing was a Midnight's Fire backstory.
Right.
And then the last book that we're going to cover today, it opens up with Riri and Xavier cleaning up the garage after the Midnight's firefight. They're kind of talking, and we learn that she had some sort of motion detector out somewhere. It never really went into what, but...
Well, when she went to see... what's her name?
Daya.
Daya. She planted that stuff.
But that was just a bug, a listening bug. I don't know. It could have been that it was, but I didn't read that into it. Gotcha. It made me wonder if she had like drones flying around or something. But anyway, she gets a reading that Daya is on the move. So she jumps out to follow her. And apparently she can go basically invisible. It has some sort of cloaking device, which was neat. Anyway, she follows Daya and ends up at this old place. I'm just calling it Birch's Lair, that governor candidate.
Yeah.
And all these kids are there. And basically she just makes herself known because Daya like pulls a gun on him. And she's like, you, you weren't gonna, you know, all before she's able to do anything, I think Ironheart steps in and we have a little standoff for a minute. But this is another moment where we get a little bit of a supervillain monologue. He's not even a supervillain, just a bad guy monologue. No. And we learn that he decided that if I take all these kids that live on the streets that nobody cares about and I put them to work for me, stealing information from these important people, then I can use that information to, you know, basically blackmail these rich people. And then I can solve the crime problem as the governor,
right,
that I started myself. But in the middle of this, Midnight Fire comes in and he I think he even knocks out the Birch or something like that.
Yeah.
And he kind of says he's so such a small part of this plan. He's not important.
Right.
And once again, Midnight Fire and Ironheart fight. And this is another instance where she knocked him out, but once again, he got away. Was this the thing in the bank vault?
Yes.
Okay. So she gets him knocked out, wraps him up and puts him in this bank vault. Like, I need to go take care of these kids, get them out of here. Then the cops show up and like want to arrest Ironheart. And mm-hmm. she like plays this holographic imaging of like, this is what happened. It wasn't me. I was trying to help.
Right.
Here, this is the guy we're looking for. And she opens up the vault and he's gone, of course. And then there's a cool scene where they're trying to get all these kids out of there. And I guess most of them have gotten away. But there's like six kids left that don't have rides.
Right.
And so Riri calls her mom. Her mom comes and drives a few of them away. And she flies off with two kids.
With two of them.
And they're like, oh, this is awesome.
This is better than Six Flags.
Yeah. Nice. And then kind of the next scene, essentially that's like the end. Like, right, we've wrapped this up. Now we have a little epilogue where we see the news the next day or something that Birch has been kind of outed as this criminal mastermind. And it doesn't say he's pulled from the race, but I mean, mm-hmm. there's no way that, like, I think his political party's distancing sure. themselves from him, looking for other candidates. And then the very last thing, we see that Riri has apparently used the connections she made whenever she returned all those stolen devices to all the rich people who are very grateful to not have their dirty secrets out,
right,
that they basically bankrolled her, creating her own lab where she can create her own stuff. MIT doesn't own it. And it's in Chicago.
Yes.
So that's kind of how it leaves. And then the funny thing is at the end, it shows a bunch of these kids. She's let them into her lab. It's a secret location and nobody can know about it, but she has all these kids.
Yeah.
And there's like, if you ever need a place to stay, a safe place, you're welcome.
Right.
And that's kind
of it. Also ends one last thing with earlier on in the issues, Riri's mom asked her to come to
a
small group thing. And Riri finally goes with her mom just because, again, she's kind of been dealing with the trauma of losing her father and her best friend and then also almost dying to an intergalactic warlord.
Yeah.
anyway, that is not the end of that story, but that's all that we are covering today.
Yeah. This run goes for another six or seven issues?
Yes. I highly recommend it. You might feel like, well, dang, they didn't really cover much. Well, that's because there's a lot more going on in that story that they haven't got to yet. So highly recommend you cover this one, Riri Williams. Is a relatively new character, as we just discussed. Well, I guess she's 7 years old now, but you know, she's not 80 years old like Iron Man or whatever. And I think she's going to be super prominent in the MCU going forward. So if you want some more continuity and context for that character moving forward for those shows, absolutely jump in like this. I recommend her origin story too. It's super mm-hmm. cool. It's the first. I mean, she actually, I think, is first appearance in Iron Man number 15 or 16 from 2016, when Tony Stark was, it's like the issue right
Iron
after
Man number
he
seven.
Goes missing. What was it?
Iron Man number 7. Invincible Iron Man number 7, 2016.
Okay. Maybe I was just
And it was Invincible Iron Man number 3 from 2017 as Ironheart.
Yes. Anyway, check it out.
It's there go cool. my trivia questions.
Oh, yeah.
No, right just there. Kidding.
Cool. Well, we can take a quick break and then come back for some trivia and wrap this episode up. We'll be right back. And we're back with our lightning round trivia, where our questions are faster than Riri Williams quickly recovers from those cyber ninjas hitting her in the back, and she blasts them right in the face.
Yep.
Sorry if I just blew out your speakers. Cool. We're going to do some trivia again. This is a fresh round for every one of these. I'll start.
Okay.
Gregory Williams' origin story starts right after Tony Stark goes missing, leaving a hole in the position of CEO to run Stark Industries, who temporarily takes over to make sure that everything doesn't fall apart, but has a very hard time doing so because of who they are.
My gut was going to say Peter Parker.
No. It's actually Friday, his artificial intelligence.
Oh, okay, okay.
And they are like, we're not listening to you.
Okay.
And but she is authorized and able to run the company, but they're like, no, that's we're not funny. Doing this. So yeah, Friday, his AI takes over.
Wow.
When he goes AWOL.
Okay. Well, my question was, the answer to this was mentioned, kind of, in one of the episodes we read. One of the issues we read. How does it say? Riri is a fan of a specific hip-hop group. Do you remember who they were? That was mentioned in, like, it might have been the first
A Tribe episode. Called Quest.
That is correct!
Pow, 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 pow.
You win this round.
If you haven't listened to A Tribe Called Quest, shut this podcast off and go listen.
I've never heard them, so.
Oh, man, you would like it. Old school hip-hop.
Torrance, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. Well, cool. Then, I guess we can wrap this up. We will be back next week with our final installment of Black History Month with Truth, Red, White, and Black.
Don't miss it. It's a cool one. See y'all next time. Bye.
I already hit that button once today. Why do I need to hit it again? Yeah. Twice, actually.
Two Man Comic Book Club podcast is hosted by Alex Miller and Drew Morris. Our graphic and logo work is done by Tessa Price, and our original compositions and theme music were composed by Drew Morris.
Oh, dang it. That's the closing. And I can't turn it off.
It's annoying that we can't just turn it off. Yeah. What if we just ended the podcast?
All right, I guess we're done. I hit the wrong button.